This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a carb?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for you.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9. Alan, it's been a big few weeks.
Absolutely. We've had MIFF, the craziness of MIFF, and all the queer film that we've been watching at MIFF.
And reviewing over the past few weeks.
Yeah, and of course, this crazy, mad debate that we have with the same with marriage equality survey that's going on.
Well, call it a survey, call it a postal hate poll, whatever you want to call it.
It's not a plebiscite. That's what it's not.
It's been a bit all-consuming, hasn't it?
Oh, without a doubt it has. I mean, it's flooding our social media, it's flooding our regular media. It's consuming a lot of our conversations.
And tonight it's flooding Outtakes.
It is indeed.
No,
it is
look. Indeed. I think we can agree that we're all a bit over the debate already, mm-hmm. and we've still got a long way to go. So tonight what we're doing on Outtakes is we're turning our attentions to our canon of cinema and the strength that we can draw from our cinema, from our queer cinema. So we're asking, what lessons does our cinema teach us to get us, yes, ready? What lessons can we draw from this fabulous repertoire of films that we've amassed over years and years and years to give us strength as we combat these naysayers?
That's right. So we're going to be climbing the pulpit tonight and we are going to be delivering some filmic parables from our cinematic canon, as you so aptly described, Daniel.
So over the course of the program, we'll be counting down our top five lessons from the coffers of queer cinema. It's going to be a fun program, I think. We're dealing with some meaty matter, but I think we're both fans of all of the films that we're looking at tonight.
Oh, yeah, they're great films.
And lessons from them.
And the lessons are going to be uplifting, upbeat, optimistic, and you're going to float out of Outtakes.
It might be a bit of a camp farce, but yeah. But that's Outtakes, you know?
Totally. Yeah.
And in fact, we want our listeners to join in. We want to know what you think the film that's going to sustain you through the next month is going to be.
And we have some double passes to give away.
That's right. So message in.
For those people,
let us know what film you think is going to sustain you through the next month, what film you think is going to get you, yes, ready. And Alan,
it's going to inspire you and get
what
you
do we
there.
Have to give to our favourite message?
We have a couple of double passes to God's Own Country. And God's Own Country, we've covered on MIFF. We've covered on Outtakes before. It's a film aired during MIFF.
And we'll be looking at it.
Of multiple film awards.
But we'll also be looking at it next week.
Yes.
As we explore the muddy terrain of pastoral romance.
Yes, a bone of contention, that description, Daniel. But anyway, God's Own Country, it's a story of, Francis Lee's debut is a heartfelt and sexy drama of a Yorkshire sheep farmer coming to terms with both family obligations and his own conflicted sexuality. So we have two of those, two double passes to give away thanks to Rialto Distribution.
And this is I think, a really timely and contemporary pastoral romance, a timely and contemporary love story that really pays homage to this kind of Yorkshire landscape that Francis Lee, the filmmaker, grew up in. And it tells the story of two men who are, well, one of them is really struggling with his sexuality, I think, or struggling to...
Express himself.
Exactly. To let himself love.
That's it, yeah. I think he has a blockage, he's cauterized, emotionally cauterized. I don't think there's anything wrong with his understanding of his sexuality, but which is evident in the film.
So if you have a film that you think is going to sustain you over the course of the next month, message in, let us know what film that is, let us know why. The number is 0427JOY949, or you can email us at onair@joy.org.au, and you could go in the running to win this double pass, because let me tell you, this is a film that you need to see. It's a really strong film, and I think it's wonderful that it's getting a broader theatrical release at the moment.
Yeah, fantastic. Thumbs up from me. So, message in, let us know.
But before we launch into those lessons that we can draw from queer cinema, we do have a semi-regular segment that we're quite fond of here on Outtakes. Mm. The segment is the Outtakes Weekly Outtakes, and it is your one-stop roundup for all things queer in cinema and TV. So, counting down to this week's Outtakes Weekly Outtakes.
You know,
you jumped the gun a bit there, Alan, didn't you?
I did. You know, I wonder if that's because of my panellist. Anyway, to Hollywood first, where Amazon Studios has acquired the rights to Aaron Sorkin's upcoming Lucille Ball biopic. Sorkin is penning the script. Now, Sorkin, you might know, has wrote A Few Good Men and The Social Network.
And The Newsroom.
And The Newsroom, yes. So while The Wrap has reported that Cate Blanchett is set to play the comedic redhead. So that's word on the street, is Cate is going to be doing it. So the film will chronicle Ball's 20-year marriage to Desi Arnaz, with whom she starred on the classic TV sitcom I Love Lucy.
And still in Hollywood, Disney has found its Jafar. Marwan Kenzari will join Naomi Scott, Will Smith and Mina Masood in Guy Ritchie's upcoming live-action Aladdin remake.
And, you know, just one for the trivia buffs. Yeah. I had to Google what Jafar means, and it means stream in Arabic. Take that as an FYI.
Well, I think fans did. They took to Twitter soon after the announcement to share pictures of a half-naked and quite buff Kenzari. Said one user, Oz Jasmine didn't want Jafar because he was creepy and old and had a parrot, but I don't know what her reason is going to be now because Jafar is hot AF.
Looking forward to that one. And to Scotland now, where shooting has started on Annabelle Jenkins' new film, Tell It to the Bees. So it's not about honeybees, I don't think, but it's based on a novel of the same name. The film will follow the two women as their relationship develops in a small town in England in the 1950s. Out bisexual actor Anna Paquin and Holly Granger are set to star. So you might remember Anna as Sookie Stokehouse. In Stackhouse, in True Blood.
Did you just say something?
As queer as possibly can be. Jenkel has described the film as an unholy mashup of 1950s social and magical realism.
And now turning to the small screen, BBC America has announced that it will air Queers, an 8-part short film series about the British gay experience. Curated and directed by Sherlock co-creator Mark Gatiss, Queers will feature 8 15-minute monologues that chronicle over a century of gay life in the UK. It will star Ben Whishaw, Russell Tovey and Alan Cumming.
Yeah, looking forward to that one. And also on the small screen news, Lana Wachowski has revealed that she's penning new scripts for a third season of Sense8. This comes after the popular show was cancelled earlier this year amid rumours that a porn production house is vying for the rights to produce the embattled Netflix series. Speaking in third person, Lana said she's writing because she believes so much in the fans that they're going to go out and actually create so many more fans. Lana's actually going ahead and writing the entire third season.
And finally, Cher has released a new song. The gay icon and Academy Award winner has lent her vocals to Oogaboo, which will now score the opening sequence to animated children's show Home, Adventures with Tip and O. Alan, have you heard Oogaboo?
Never heard of it. Are you about to enlighten me?
Shall we play a little bit of Oogaboo now?
I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Yeah, you sound it,
yeah. Alan. Hit me with it.
You are listening to the home of queer cinema. It's Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
For you, but found something else, not Oogaboo. Here's a message from still miss you? Can I tell it all if I don't have to? Can I speak of you without my ooga boo? Ooga, 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 boo. Feelings a whole, feelings a whole because of you. I can see the light of me in you. When the time comes down, you will know it too. Follow your heart, always be true. You go be you, find your ooga boo. Ooga, 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 boo. Ooga, 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 boo. Here's a message from one or two. You go be you, find your ooga boo. Here's a message from one or two. You go be you, find your ooga boo.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema. That was Ooga Boo, Cher's new song, which is the opening sequence song for Home, Adventures with Tip and O, which is a children's series.
Daniel, I never want you to play that song ever again. And I want them. I want somebody to burn the master to that song.
I reckon that's going to be playing everywhere around the world. I think people are going to eat that up.
I don't care. It's time for Cher to turn the microphone off.
Listen, for a 70, she's 71. Off. She's doing a
That was a travesty. And it's tarnishing her legacy. I'm sorry. It's got to go.
We are looking at the lessons that we can draw from queer cinema to get us, yes, ready. Coming up, lesson number one, right after this.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9, the home of queer cinema, where tonight we are counting down lessons from queer cinema that can get us, yes, ready and weather us through this next month, which is already shaping up to be, it's shaping up to be a challenge, isn't it, Alan?
I think these are meant to be uplifting little lessons learned, pearls of wisdom to get us through.
That's so right.
It's our little pep talk for the coaches of queer cinema.
And we do want to hear from you. We want to know what film you think is going to get you, yes, ready, what film you think is going to sustain you through the next month. It can be, I don't know, a lighthearted film that's going to make you feel good when you watch it, or a film that you think is going to inspire you and kind of give you words of strength.
Absolutely.
Message in on 0427JOY949 or email us at onair@joy.org.au.
And we have a message, Daniel, from Gina, our co-host. So Gina is loving Palm Cove up near Cairns.
She's left us for a warmer climate.
She's rubbing it in. She's saying, missing you but not the weather. Gina and her lovely loves, feel good vote yes film choices are Sister Act, Goonies for the Rainbow Families, to see a motley crew of misfits win, and Dirty Dancing because no one puts gays in the corner. Way to go, Gina.
Some great picks.
Oh, I love them. They're great. Left of field, wouldn't have thought of them, but I'm with you. I love it.
Well, let's kick off our list of the top five lessons from queer cinema to get us, yes, ready. And we're going to start with a film that I think really did resonate in the kind of gay consciousness. Mm-hmm. And the film is Milk.
It had a real zeitgeist at the time. You know, it tells the story of Harvey Milk, who was the first openly gay elected official in the history of California, who was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. After multiple attempts, he finally was elected. And this film sort of tells a parallel story between him and another elected official at the time, Dan White. And Dan White, who is not our representative, Daniel White, who's sitting across the panel from me, but Dan White was quite a conservative man. And the film actually goes on to show the assassination of Harvey Milk and the mayor of San Francisco, George Moscone. So this is the story of Milk.
And I think, as I said before, the film really did resonate. Todd McCarthy of Variety called the film adroitly and tenderly observed. He said it was smartly handled. The Hollywood Reporter said that it transcends any single genre as a very human document that touches first and foremost on the need to give people hope. Mm-hmm. And even Christianity Today has stated that Milk achieves what it set out to do, which is telling an inspiring tale about one man's quest to legitimize his identity and to give hope to his community. So you really can see that it resonated, and you can see why we've picked it this evening. This is a story about hope. It's a story about courage, and it's about standing up for who you are and what you deserve.
And that's what Harvey Milk actually managed to do. He galvanized the people of San Francisco and the gay community of San Francisco and channeled their political power to achieve these outcomes. And I think this is probably one of the first times that this has happened.
Well, Harvey Milk has played so wonderfully in this film by Sean Penn. I think Sean Penn is a wonderful character actor, and I think he really does inhabit Milk in a really kind of intellectual way in this film. And there's that wonderful moment, which is, I mean, what the film does really well is that it through Penn, gives voice to a lot of Milk's actual words and actual speeches. Mm. And there's this wonderful scene termed within the literature the Hope Speech, where Sean Penn as Harvey Milk delivers this speech calling on people to come out and fight for their rights. And this scene, this furnishes lesson number one from queer cinema history.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you. I want to recruit you for the fight to preserve your democracy. Brothers and sisters, you must come out. Come out to your neighbors. Come out to your fellow workers. Once and for all, let's break down the myths and destroy the lies and distortion. For your sake, for their sake, for the sake of all the youngsters who have been scared by the votes from Dade to Eugene. On the Statue of Liberty, it says, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to be free. No matter how hard you try, you can never chip those words from the face of the Statue of Liberty. That is what America is. Love it or leave it.
God, doesn't that just make you so... I mean, that's such a kind of heartwarming clip. I mean, this is what I love about queer cinema. When we are down, when we are challenged, we really can draw strength from our cinema.
Absolutely. I mean, it's stirring, uplifting, inspirational stuff.
And in fact, I think it's resonated with one of our listeners.
Oh, it has indeed. Nick from Caulfield has written in and he says, Milk is my film, reminding us to be loud and visible.
Thank you for messaging in, Nick.
Did you tee him up, Daniel? Did you word him up on that? Because that's almost word for word out of our playbook for tonight.
We're rubbing off on our listeners, aren't we, Alan? Boom. Message in on 0427JOY949. Email us at onair@joy.org.au. Let us know, too, what film inspires you and what film is going to get you yes ready. And I have to say, the other thing I really liked about that clip, going back and revisiting Milk this past week, is that it's very familiar. It sounds very similar to something that we've heard in Parliament just recently.
But we cannot let illegitimate tactics deter us. We cannot sit on the sidelines. I understand the sense of frustration and betrayal by the Parliament for LGBTI Australians, but the most powerful act of resistance is to vote yes for equality. Maintain your hope, maintain your enthusiasm. Vote yes and make sure that your friends and relatives and colleagues and classmates and teammates vote yes too. Get your name on the electoral roll today. Make your voice heard.
Now, I'm not Bill Shorten's number one fan, but what I love about the comparison of these two clips is that there is a call out. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell the people in your workplace, tell your teammates, tell everyone that you are, I mean, it's sad that we have to do this, but that you are a valid individual and that you deserve rights too.
Absolutely. And I love the message there, which is maintain hope, maintain enthusiasm and vote yes. That's the way to get through this.
We are counting down the top lessons that queer cinema can teach us. To get us yes ready to sustain us through the next month. More coming up on Outtakes right after this.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are looking at the lessons that queer cinema can teach us to get us, yes, ready and to sustain us through the next very challenging month. And this is the final soundtrack piece in the 2009 made-for-TV film Prayers for Bobby, from which our second lesson comes.
Are you sure about that, Daniel?
Sure about what?
That sounds very much like it came from the Lion King. Really? No. Anyway, well, maybe it's sounded like I thought, oh, wow.
We'll take that as a comment.
We're shifting gear and we're going to the Lion King. But
there might be some Disney coming up later in the program. You know, it's a rare Outtakes program where Disney doesn't get its foot in the door.
Okay, well.
Prayers for Bobby is a televised docudrama that premiered on the Lifetime Network coming up to 8 years ago. Mm. So it's based on the critically acclaimed book Prayers for Bobby, A Mother's Coming to Terms with the Suicide of Her Gay Son by Leroy Ahrens. And it's co-written by Maggie. So the character that's Sigourney... Mary Griffith. All right, so it's co-written by Mary Griffith, who's played by Sigourney Weaver. So it's based on the book that they co-wrote called Prayers for Bobby, A Mother's Coming to Terms with the Suicide of Her Gay Son, and which itself is based on the true story and the life legacy of Bobby Griffith, a young gay man who killed himself in 1983 due to his mother's homophobia. So the mother, of course, is Mary Griffith, who's played by Sigourney Weaver. And this is such a touching and poignant film. Brian Lowry of Variety wrote, Sigourney Weaver's TV movie debut proves worth the wait as Lifetime's fact-based Prayers for Bobby revisits ground similar to that broken nearly 25 years ago by the AIDS-themed An Early Frost. And thanks to the enduring religious based bigotry towards gays still feels fresh and poignant.
Absolutely, definitely does feel fresh and poignant. And I think this is the remarkable story of someone who has been indoctrinated or has a very firm held belief throughout her whole life that homosexuality is a sin and that it can be cured, it's a lifestyle choice. And she comes full circle. You know, she goes on a journey of discovery of her own, and I think she finally comes to the realization that being homosexual is a completely natural act, that natural state of being, and that has absolutely nothing at all to do with religion.
I read the book a few years ago, and the book is it gives a lot of insight into Mary's upbringing in a very traditionally religious household. And the film goes into that, but not in as much depth. And I think you get a lot of insight into the way that she was, without realizing it, indoctrinated.
That's right. It was a deep conditioning of her childhood and her upbringing. So that's a lot to deep programming, which can be very difficult to overcome.
I think one of the reasons why this film is touching is because although it's dramatic and even melodramatic at times, and who doesn't love a bit of melodrama, although it is dramatic, I don't think it moralizes. I mean, it clearly has a message.
Of course. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on one of our five lessons.
that's right. But I don't think it judges. So it doesn't judge people who grow up in a religious environment.
No.
It shows all kinds of different religious people. And in fact, it shows some really supportive religious groups.
But it had to explore those themes, because that was the reality of the situation of a very deeply religious woman and her journey of discovery.
That's right. And the way that she let those beliefs that she was indoctrinated with really tear apart her relationship with their son and drive him to the edge.
That's right.
I mean, obviously that wasn't the sole contributor, but she felt like it had a lot to do with it, and she dedicated the rest of her life to fighting for LGBT rights.
And that's the message of hope here, is that you can change people's minds and people can then turn from being an enemy to an advocate.
Well, I think the message is actually a little bit more simple than that. There's this wonderful scene towards the end of the film where Mary Griffith, played by Sigourney Weaver, who actually, I have to note, won all manner of awards for this performance. She was nominated for 2 Primetime Emmy Awards, a Golden Globe Award, a Screen Actors Guild Award, and she also won the GLAAD Media Award for an outstanding performance, and the film won for Outstanding TV Movie or Miniseries. So She was critically lauded for this role. But there's this wonderful scene towards the end where she gives voice to the speech that was actually said by the real Mary Griffith some 30 years ago now, when the community was kind of rallying to have this kind of gay day to give gay people visibility. And she kind of gave this speech about how she was indoctrinated and how she felt that contributed, that indoctrination contributed to her son's death, really. Mm. And the message she gives is every time you say something hurtful, think and remember a child is listening. Yeah. That's a message she gives in this wonderful speech. Mm-hmm. She delivers it so eloquently, and that message, if you're not crying by the end of that speech, yeah, and if you're not crying by the end of the movie, I mean, it is powerful stuff.
There are children like Bobby sitting in your congregations. Unknown to you, they will be listening as you echo amen. And that will soon silence their prayers. Their prayers to God for understanding and acceptance and for your love. But your hatred and fear and ignorance of the word gay will silence those prayers. So, before you echo amen in your home and place of worship, think and remember, a child is listening.
So there it is, lesson number two from queer cinema history, think and remember, a child is listening.
And your words are very powerful.
Now, we are asking you to message in and let us know what films you think are going to sustain you over the next month, what films you think are going to get you yes ready. We've looked at two films so far this evening, Milk and Prayers for Bobby, and the lessons that they can teach us. The first lesson is, of course, tell your friends. And the second lesson, think and remember, a child is listening. Yep. But we've asked our listeners to message in and let us know what their yes ready films are.
When you do message in, you'll be in the running for a double pass to God's Own Country. There are two double passes for us to give away. You have to be a Joy member of Not Have Won Anything in the last week. And we have had a couple of messages, Daniel. We've had a message in from Richard from Caulfield, and he said his film that's going to get him through is Sister Act. And he said that, Snap Gina.
Is it just the kind of strange dancing and kind of gospel singing that's going to get you through, Richard? What is it about Sister Act? Because Gina also said it as well.
I think maybe he'd just like to dress up in a nun's habit and run wild. I think that would be a fun
message
way to
in
get
and let
through
us know,
the next,
Richard,
two,
if that's,
next
if
month.
That's what it is about Sister Act.
So please message in and go in the running for a double pass to see God's Own Country, courtesy of Rialto Distribution. And you can do that by texting in on 0427JOY949 or email us on air at joy.org.au.
Now, we're moving right along. So our third lesson this evening comes from the 2013 critical and commercial success. I mean, this is the kind of top grossing animation of all time, mm-hmm, one of the top grossing films of all time. The film, of course, is Frozen. Mm-hmm. So it's the 2013 computer animated musical fantasy film produced by Walt Disney and distributed by Disney Pictures. It's the 53rd Disney animated feature film, and of course it's inspired by Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale, The Snow Queen. It tells the story of a fearless princess, as so many of Disney's characters are, mm-hmm, who sets off on a journey alongside a rugged Iceman, his loyal pet reindeer, and a native snowman to find her estranged sister, whose icy powers have inadvertently trapped the kingdom in an eternal winter.
Yes, and we've explored the queer subplot to Elsa to Frozen in the past.
What subplot is that, Alan? I know you and I have a bit of a disagreement about that plot.
Well, I think it's pretty clear. Here we have Elsa, who's been told by society, by her parents, to repress and suppress her true self. Only later on in life for that to come bubbling through and to cause a bit of a meltdown. And then she has to flee, run away, until she comes to grips with herself and come to terms with herself. I mean, if that's not queer, I don't know what is, Daniel. But I'm a little bit suspicious as to why you chose this film, Daniel, because one of the actors in it, I think, is your future husband, isn't it? That's what you're trying to smell.
Jonathan Groff.
Secretly, that's what is going to get you through the next month, isn't it, Daniel? Thoughts of Jonathan Groff. That's what it's about. I know you. I know you, Daniel.
If Jonathan Groff is listening, he has an open invitation to join us in the Outtake studio at any time.
Yes.
But no, look, I realise that there's been a lot that's been said about the kind of queer thematics of this film. And certainly, I think the internet went into meltdown about the possibility that Elsa, voiced by Adele Kazim, mm-hmm. yeah, Idina Menzel, you totally missed that one, Alan.
I did.
That Elsa, the internet kind of went into meltdown over the fact that she might be a lesbian because she's this strong, independent, powerful woman. And I just take umbrage with that, Alan, because every time there's a strong, just because you're strong and independent doesn't mean you're a lesbian. Lesbians might be independent or strong or any of these things, or they might,
You know, Daniel, I wasn't talking about the potential lesbian nature of Elsa's character. I was talking more about her queer nature, which is one of being othered and ostracised and being different.
Well, writing for the Film International, Robert Gill argued that while the film offers a superficially progressive vision of homosexuality, it perpetuates conservative notions about sexuality and gender. Elsa's female homosexuality is rendered visually pleasurable to the male gaze. Male transgressions of homosexuality, on the other hand, are coded in various negative ways. So there's a different take. I think Robert Gill, writing for Film International, just takes it for granted that the film has a vision of homosexuality. Yep. I mean, I disagree. I don't think that it does. But I do agree with you that it is... It does have a very queer sensibility, as I think so many of Disney's films do. I think something about the medium of animation, and particularly the way that Disney has employed it, does lend itself to queer interpretation and queer imagination.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've explored on the program a lot. But the reason we're discussing Frozen tonight is because... as a potentially queer-leaning film, it does give us our third lesson.
Which is... if you're surrounded by hate and fear, that you need to just let it go. Let it go. Let it go.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where tonight we're counting down the top five lessons that queer cinema can teach us to get us, yes, ready and sustain us through the next month. And that was lesson number three, Let It Go from Frozen, which, Alan, can you believe that film is now 4 years old?
Four years old. 2013.
And I remember sitting in the cinema when that came out, hearing that song and thinking, wow.
Jonathan Groff is going to marry you.
No, that's not what I was thinking.
No, what were you thinking?
I was thinking, this is a treat because that song is Amaze Me. Do you know what? I went online to watch it before on a certain video streaming site.
Okay.
And how many views do you think that clip has had?
Well, I reckon, hang on, let me break this down. I think... you know, pre-teenage girls is probably about a billion hits just from them. And then everybody else, probably another billion, 2 billion?
You know, you're not far off.
Yeah.
You're not far off.
That's just a total guess.
It's 1.7 billion approximately.
Almost $1 of box office takes per hit.
I mean, this film is the most commercially successful animation ever. I think
$1.3 billion is their total box office
today. It's ranked between somewhere like number 3 and number 9 in terms of gross of any movie. And clearly it is a queer-leaning film, if for no other reason than queer fans have responded to it. Yeah. So enthusiastically. And to that response, the director, Jennifer Lee, said, "We know what we made, but at the same time, I feel like once we hand the film over, it belongs to the world. So I don't like to say anything and let the fans talk. I think it's up to them.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's really interesting. But then she went on to say that Disney films always reflect the kind of time period that they're made in. Yeah. And this film was made in 2013, so it has a 2013 point of view.
Okay.
So she gives and she takes.
I don't know
that she knows.
And the other thing that we should point out is that she is a female director. And until Wonder Woman came out, she was the highest grossing
film. Well, the film director. Was the highest grossing film by a female director. In the US. In the US. Okay. So that's a US specific stat. Mm-hmm. But obviously that was very recently taken over by the Patty Jenkins directed Wonder Woman.
Yay.
You are listening to Outtakes, where we're counting down the top five lessons that queer cinema can teach us to get us yes ready. More coming up right after this.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema, where tonight we are counting down the top five lessons that queer cinema teaches us to get us yes ready to sustain us through the next month. So what we're doing is we're really taking strength and inspiration, I think, from our cinema. These are our films, our lessons, and I really do feel like film can get us through challenging times.
So, wise oracle of cinematic lessons, what is our next lesson?
Next lesson comes from the 2015 commercial failure, I might say.
It was, yeah, a bit of a bomb.
Freeheld. So it's an American drama directed by Peter Sollette and written by Ron Nieswander. And I remember when this film came out, I had a lot of difficulty pronouncing his name, actually. But I also did a lot of research about Ron and the script, because I agree the script is not strong. Ron wrote Philadelphia, amongst other things.
Oh, right.
So it was a bit of a shame to see the film flop in the way that it did.
Yeah.
And he said that the studio had kind of culled a lot of his script to make it more hetero-friendly, and that he had imbued the script with a more political message that had been kind of drawn back.
Mm.
And then he came out and apologized for those comments, because clearly... You know, he knows where he gets his bread and butter.
That's right. He knows which side his bread is buttered on. So that's a shame that the film was neutered in that way.
Well,
so what was it about?
Well, the film is about Laurel Hester. Laurel Hester, a real person who fought against a particular county in the US to allow her pension benefits to be transferred to her domestic partner once she was diagnosed with a terminal cancer.
Mm-hmm. And her domestic partner obviously is a woman, played by Ellen Page.
That's right. And Laurel Hester is played by Julianne Moore, who I think is always wonderful on screen. So I'm not going to say a bad word about her, and therefore I won't be talking about her performance in this film.
Of course not, Daniel, because it was either going to be a Julianne Moore or a Meryl Streep film in these lessons.
Meryl Streep? Yes. Oh my God, I thought you were saying that Meryl Streep is going to be cast as Laurel Hester.
No, no, this is not a shocking trivia.
Yeah, there's no Meryl Streep film in this lineup. Look, if you've got a Meryl Streep film that you think is going to give you strength over the next month, message in, let us know. 0427JOY949. It might be Mamma Mia. It might be The Hours. It might be
Angels in America.
Oh my God, there's so much to choose from.
Who knew?
But we're talking about Freeheld, Alan. We're talking about Freeheld.
Okay, Daniel, but we should point out that the events of this film occurred 10 years before marriage equality came into effect in the United States.
And I think the message that this film teaches us is really quite simple. The message is love, mm-hmm. and all love is equal before the law. Or certainly love between consenting adults. It ought to be legal before the law. A really simple message that the naysayers just can't seem to understand.
But see, the thing is, Daniel, I think the point must be made that the reason why this film is so important the reason why it's so important for us to have marriage equality is so that we don't have to go to the court to enable our partners and our wives, our husbands, to actually receive the benefits and privileges that heterosexual marriages receive.
It's about that, definitely. But
so
it is
about equality.
It is about
equality. It's about love.
Well, it's about both of those things, because it is. I mean, what it's really about is the fact that, I mean, it sounds trite, but we are all equal. And before the law, our love should be given just as much validity as anyone else's.
have anything, what would it be? What's your dream?
A house, a dog, a woman I love, loves me.
Me too.
Maybe a second half. This domestic partnership thing is new.
I kind of like the idea of you as a kept woman.
What's the matter?
I don't know. I think you pulled a muscle.
Are you gonna check out?
Yeah.
My name is Detective Laurel Hester. I've worked for the Ocean County Police Department for 23 years. Recently, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. When my heterosexual colleagues die, their pensions go to their spouses. But because my partner is a woman, I don't get to do that. In my career, I've never asked for special treatment. I'm only asking for equality.
We anguish over this situation, but we have to deny your request.
It's an outrageous miscarriage of justice. Their next meeting, we show up with 100 protesters.
Radicals and strangers from New York aren't going to convince these guys.
I am not a radical. I am a middle-class Jewish homosexual from New Jersey. How about you, sweetheart?
I'm a straight, white, ex-Protestant, atheist cop. You okay with that, sweetheart?
I am. That is very hot.
I'm worried about Stacy. She's had so much to deal with. You know, she's so young.
I love you.
It's not fair.
No, it isn't.
I know you feel like crying. I want to tell you about our house. I just really like to hold on to it.
Remember how much we love each other.
If they say yes, then my tax dollars go to her girlfriend.
Yeah, the same way your wife gets your pension if you die.
Yeah, but she's my wife.
Hell, if you and I got married tomorrow, I'd be entitled to your benefits.
Is that a proposal?
Oh, my God.
We are sticking to a losing position because of some personal beliefs.
It's an opportunity to change the world.
Thing I care about is justice for the woman that I love.
So there it is, Alan. Lesson number 4. Love is love and all love is equal before the law.
Or it damn well bloody well should be. which is going to happen.
Now, that was, of course, the trailer to Freeheld. And we've talked about Freeheld a little bit before on Outtakes. Another film that we've looked at on Outtakes before is The Freedom to Marry, which is a documentary from Eddie Rosenstein. And it charts, I think, the legal fight in America to have same-sex marriage or marriage equality legalized. It's a film that we looked at a number of months ago. And the reason that we looked at it, or one of the reasons that we looked at it, is because it follows Evan Wolfson, who was called by Time Magazine one of the most influential people in the world at one stage, and has been labelled the architect of gay marriage. And I just bring that up after looking at Freeheld, which is acutely concerned with the legal fight for equality and the recognition that love is love. I bring that up because our interview with Evan Wolfson is available on our podcast page. So if you're interested in hearing our chat with Evan Wolfson, the architect of gay marriage in the US, who actually had some things to say about what we should be doing here in Australia to win marriage equality, head to joy.org.au/outtakes and take a listen to that podcast. You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are counting down the top 5 lessons that queer cinema can teach us to get us, yes, ready and sustain us through the next month. And this, of course, is You Can't Stop the Beat, the concluding track from Hairspray, which is obviously, it's a 2007 musical romantic comedy based on the 2002 Broadway musical of the same name, which in turn is based on John Walters' 1988 comedy film.
Starring Divine.
Queer classic.
Absolute queer classic, and John Walters is a true legend.
And I think the lesson in this film, and indeed in this song, is really quite simple.
Which is that social change, and this change is inevitable. It's going to happen.
So I think what... What this film teaches us is that you can't stop the bee.
You can't stop it.
And actually, we posted this on our...
We're going to keep going and going and going and going until we get it.
Right into Well's 8 o'clock spot, which comes up right after this. The point that I was going to make is that the words of this song are actually really quite... they resonate really meaningfully. I think you captured it before. There's all kinds of changes, and you just can't stop them.
That's right. And I think we've got, and I think this sort of plays in very well with Prayers for Bobby and Mary Griffiths, where we've got, where we're saying here that you can't stop the beat, change is inevitable, and despite your conditioning, your conditioning of childhood and your deeply held beliefs, the Australian public, they have proven that they've gone on this journey, the same journey as Mary Griffiths, and their mind is changing. Their beliefs are changing. It is inevitable. You can't stop the beat.
Thank you for that kind sermon. I think it's been a really fun program,
it's been a great
Alan.
Show.
We've unpacked some really kind of encouraging and inspiring messages from our canon of queer cinema. And I think what this does show us is that whatever happens, we can draw strength from our cinema. Cinema is important. We go on about the importance of representation time and again here on Outtakes.
That's right.
But there is no doubt that it's important now because it can encourage us, it can inspire us, and it can give us strength.
And that's right. And marriage equality is absolutely essential for you, Daniel, so that when Jonathan Groff does arrive in Australia, you can get down on your knee and propose and marry the man that you are destined to marry, Daniel. So I can't wait for that day, and I want to be there at the wedding, at your wedding.
Best man, Alan, best man. That's it for another week on Outtakes.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.